Hi, my name is Chris, and I work at Microsoft, and we're currently in the middle of the DSL DevCon, a little conference we're throwing up here on the Microsoft campus. And with me, I have the keynote speaker of the DSL DevCon, the 2 years you've been working on the DSL book for 2 years, the Duke of DSLs, Martin Fowler. Martin, you gave a lovely keynote this morning. I enjoyed
morning?
It quite a
wow,
bit.
Was it
yeah,
ago?
Yeah. Well, I guess it was only a couple hours ago. Yes, that's true.
I guess it was morning in Hawaii.
Well, there you go. Well, and wouldn't it have been nice?
I think it would have been much nicer.
Yes, I'm all dressed for Hawaii. I clearly wanted to be in Hawaii with one of those little umbrella drinks. That would have been fabulous. So what I've noticed in our industry is that we don't have any conferences anywhere nice like that. It's all like above the 45th parallel. It's always cold. It's always rainy. It's not. How come we never have conferences in Fiji or Hawaii or anywhere like that?
That's because we're just not rich and important enough, I'm afraid. We haven't brought the world economy down to its knees like the financial industry has yet.
Someday.
Hopefully. That is one of my ambitions.
Yes, absolutely.
The world economy.
Yes, hopefully. Yeah. Well, yes. Well, and hopefully with this new technology that we've been exploring today at this conference, DSLs, we can do that.
Yes.
So just as a summary for folks at home, you gave a fabulous definition of domain-specific languages in the keynote today. Can you tell us again what that is?
off the top of my head?
No. Yes.
But I can summarize.
You had that fabulous definition.
Yeah, well, you know, look at the book online. You'll find it there somewhere. Defining DSLs is actually a very difficult way to approach the topic because the definitions are very fuzzy and very abstract, so I like to look at DSLs by example. So DSLs are things like regular expressions, SQL, Hibernate query mappings, XAML.
Sure.
Those are examples.
So those are concrete examples. Are concrete examples of some overall abstract idea,
right,
which we call DSLs.
Yep.
And so what does that mean?
Well, the thing we then say, okay, so what's interesting about these languages? What makes them intriguing? And one of the things that I particularly tend to focus on, as I mentioned in the talk, is the fact that these languages are actually pretty wimpy.
Sure.
Yeah, you know, they get sand kicked in their face all the time by real languages.
Maybe another reason we don't hang out on the beaches.
Exactly.
Yes.
But their wimpiness is actually a great source of power. If you want to describe the visual appearance of a web page, CSS is really, really good at that. Now, you couldn't use CSS to describe complex mathematical notation because it's just not well suited for that.
Sure.
But its limited capability makes it much easier to use for the particular task it has at hand.
Yes. And in fact, that was one of the things that really struck me about your definition of DSLs in your talk this morning was that it is a computer language with limited expressive capabilities. And when you say it like that, it makes it sound like a bad thing. It's limited, except it's not. In fact, I would argue that's one of the strengths. The fact that it does very little means that it can do that one thing that it does very, very well.
Exactly.
And that's, in fact, the whole reason we have DSLs in the first place.
Yes.
Wouldn't you agree?
Typically we have many of them. So any reasonable computer system that you build, you'll probably be using half a dozen DSLs, often without even noticing it.
Sure.
And that's the point, of course, is that you use multiple DSLs in conjunction with a general purpose programming language to actually build something.
So now the question becomes, is if we're using DSLs without even knowing that we're using DSLs, or the fact that we happen to be using a thing called a DSL or a half a dozen of them, why do we even bother naming them?
Well, the reason I'm interested in naming them is because I have a hypothesis that we don't use them as much as we could.
Okay.
And people aren't as good at building them as I think we might.
Okay.
And my interest is to try and explain to people how to build them more easily so that they can use them more often, and maybe that will lead to good things.
So the idea is that if we're explicit about them instead of implicit, if we know that we're doing it, if we embrace the fact that we're doing it, then we can do it better.
Yes.
And if we do it better, what does that mean in terms of the systems we built?
Well, hopefully that it will allow us to be a bit more productive, because
sure.
DSLs allow us to be able to see what's going on a lot more clearly and make us more productive. That's the most easy to obtain benefit of DSLs. The really interesting benefit of DSLs is that it allows us to communicate more effectively with domain experts who aren't computer programmers.
Ah, so for example, if you think back to the, you know, the CSS example you gave
right.
me, I know that web designers, quote unquote, author these things all the time. These people generally don't think of themselves as programmers, and in fact, they seem to be kind of proud of that. I'm not a programmer. I just put together websites, right? Like
right.
that's a, like it's a bad thing to be a computer programmer. Have we made it into?
I'm afraid we.
Yes,
have.
And I guess that's because again we don't go to Hawaii and
exactly.
we get sand
who
kicked in our faces.
Exactly. Who wants to be a computer programmer? You don't get to
yeah,
go to Hawaii.
No, I'm with you. I'm totally with you. So the idea is that we build these domain-specific languages. Computer programmers do.
Right.
For non-programmers who don't want to be like us, but they still want to contribute actual artifacts to our real running systems.
Right. And when we say contribute, one thing I do want to absolutely stress when I ever get into this is I'm not expecting that domain experts necessarily will be writing stuff in these DSLs. Occasionally they will, and actually the CSS example is one of those, but it has been this constant mission to get for programmers to get rid of programmers. And this began with COBOL, of course. I said, with COBOL, we won't have to have programmers anymore.
Right.
Because
and in fact, that language,
write their own system.
Exactly right. That language was developed specifically to not be a programming
exactly.
language. Exactly. Yes.
And I don't believe that DSLs in general will operate that way. But that still makes them, but they can still be valuable if the domain people can read the programs and reason about them and contribute that way and say, oh, this is the insurance rules for my system. That's not quite right, and maybe
right.
we need to tweak this. And then in collaboration with the programmer, they would actually make the changes.
Sure.
But just to achieve that is a huge step forward.
Absolutely.
Because what that does is it greatly deepens the communication path between programmer and domain expert. And since that is the number one bottleneck at the moment in software development,
yep.
anything we can do on that bottleneck is important.
I'm completely with you. I mean, looking at the power we get with things like HTML and CSS and XAML, where actual non-programmers are contributing live artifacts to our system, and the programmer can spend less time doing the things that they're not specifically trained in, and more time doing their domain-specific stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is write programs that do things, as opposed to layout screens or even combine business rules together. This is good for the industry.
Yes.
And it just opens up the tent for more and more people get to have visibility into the systems we're building and
yeah.
check to see whether they're running the right way.
Yeah.
So this is a good thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so that's the value of DSLs, right? If we can pull DSLs out.
That's the ring to reach for.
Right.
I think it's actually still quite difficult to do. It's still quite difficult to design a language that can actually engage domain people. But if you can pull it off, the benefits are huge.
So
and if you don't and you only get improved programmer productivity, that's a hell of a reasonable thing to get anyway.
Sure.
But we don't want to underestimate the difficulty of engaging the domain experts, because it still is quite a task.
So one of the other things that you said during your keynote, I guess it was this afternoon, not this morning,
mm-hmm.
Was that you said
but
that...
Except in Hawaii.
Except in Hawaii, which of course we'll never go to, so
yeah.
afternoon. You said that... if the we have this kind of set of tools for building languages, for building DSLs, that you,
mm-hmm.
you have a phrase for, which you called language workbenches,
right?
Which I really like that term.
Mm-hmm.
And what you said was that if the language workbench promises come true, then that could change the way we program, everything
yes.
about the way we write our programs.
Yes.
That's a pretty bold statement.
Mm-hmm.
So tell me more about why you think that is.
Well, it goes even further than the idea of people doing stuff like CSS. The thing that first got me into language workbenches was when one of my colleagues, Matt Femmel, started looking seriously at some of the work done by Charles Simonyi
mm-hmm.
with intentional programming. And about the same time, JetBrains started talking about developing something called the Metaprogramming System.
Mm-hmm.
And what these tools do, which is particularly interesting, is that they really seek to modify the editing environment and make that really be part of a whole language process. And the many ways, the way to think about this is the most common lay programming language, that is, programming language used by people who don't think of themselves as programmers, is Excel.
Sure.
Spreadsheets.
Sure.
And Excel is a curious kind of animal, because you don't really see the program. In fact, the program is mostly hidden. You see numbers, example numbers in front of you.
Sure.
And you have to kind of dig behind it a little bit to actually see, oh, there's little bits of program there.
And in fact, you just see it in little bits as you move the mouse, and then just you move your mouse over here to this cell, and then you look up here, and that's a little bit of the program.
So what happens is the program is folded together with the with a sample execution of the program.
Right.
And it's folded together with a tool. You can't imagine editing an Excel programming other than in Excel.
I mean, right.
That's just crazy talk, right?
Right.
So you've got tool, example execution, and program code all folded together in an interesting and complicated way. And that is the kind of environment which language workbenches, I think, will produce if they succeed in their promise. Is we'll be programming environments much more like that, but not just programming in them, because we kind of all can already do that, obviously, in Excel, or something like Access has some of that kind of quality to it, but we will be building environments like that, custom little environments for particular things. Because, I don't know about you, I don't really like Excel very much. It's bad abstractions, the spreadsheet model just doesn't work for me.
Well, so
I want to build specialized little things that are particular for the purpose, but it's just too hard to do so. Language workbenches, if they pull it off, you can build your own Excel-like tools and just rattle them off.
So the interesting thing about Excel is, I actually like Excel, and I probably write one or two applications in Excel every day for the things it's good at. And the thing I like about it is that I can just throw a bunch of example numbers on, and then I can refactor as I go and throw in formulas and and just make it all the way I want. And sometimes I save it for later and I modify it. As often or not, I get the results I want and I throw it over my shoulder.
Yes.
And it was so easy to build that program. I don't even think of it as a program. I don't even think of it as an artifact that I'd want to save for later. It's just I got my result and I'm done.
Yeah.
And for the kinds of things that Excel does, it's fabulous for that. I'm a huge fan.
But the point is that people use it for far more than that.
There are some serious businesses that are relying on
some spreadsheets that people are sleeping
on. I'm with you. And the thing is that when somebody gives me one of those that they have programmed and they make me use it, I hate it.
Hmm.
I can use the programs I wrote in Excel myself, but when somebody gives me one that they've written, it doesn't make any sense to me. I can't tell where I'm supposed to put my numbers. There's no good modalities, right? It's not a really good app because I can't tell what I'm supposed to do with it because I didn't write it myself.
Right.
And so I can see the need for something where you can use it and develop it at the same time, like you were describing, but that I could then package in a way that makes it obvious how other people can and use it and extend it if they want to.
Right.
And so I could see why, I could definitely see how I would do that on a domain-by-domain basis, right? If I'm talking about a two-dimensional grid, right, if my application fits in there, Excel is fine.
Yep.
But there's lots and lots of things where my data isn't best visualized by a two-dimensional grid, right? So I wouldn't want to write it in Excel. But I want that same kind of immediacy.
Yes.
And
you
so,
want the tool to be embedded in the process, and you want that immediate execution of examples so that I'm working with results, not thinking of code.
So in your keynote, you talked about how you gave some examples of things that you thought were language workbenches. What do you think are the qualities of a language workbench? I mean, what
and
makes up one?
I told you in the keynote, I was still
you
trying
had
to
no
really think
crisp
about
definition,
exactly,
but
no
I thought maybe.
Definition. Well, it comes down to this being able to fold, providing tooling that allows you not just to, it's not even parsing is not part of the issue. It allows you to build the environment for writing the scripts in the DSL, and I'm using scripts very loosely here,
but
an Excel program could be a script.
Sure.
And build that environment as well as the necessary stuff to process it to make it all execute.
Sure.
And it And that's kind of where my head is currently with what that definition is.
Got it. And so you gave some examples of things you thought were language workbenches. And one of the examples you gave was the tools provided in Oslo.
Yes.
So now's your chance, right? I'm a Microsoft employee. I work on the Oslo team. You're being taped. You're here on the Microsoft campus. You can hit us with both barrels. What do you think about Oslo? Does it meet your definition of...
It does. It doesn't meet the original definition that I had when I wrote my language workbench paper a couple of years ago, but it does meet my "I know it when I see it" test.
Right.
So it's clear. So I've got to alter. So that means I've got to alter the definition, and I already knew I had to because Xtext has the same problem. So yes, it's definitely a language workbench. What do I think about it? Well, it's still very early days.
Sure.
It's got some very interesting qualities to it. But it's going to be interesting. I mean, this whole space is going to be interesting. I spent yesterday at Intentional, so I'm still kind of wowed by some of what I saw there.
Okay.
But frankly, it makes Oslo look kind of 19th century in comparison.
Okay, great.
But then, having said that, Windows looked very 19th century in 1990 compared to the Mac, and we know what happened there. So who knows how this thing's going to play out.
So what are you saying, that Oslo is the Windows 3.1 of the DSL world?
So you hope.
Oh, my. Yeah, I guess. I guess we do hope that, yes.
Better, right? I guess what I'm saying is Oslo, it's got some very interesting features, but also some of these other tools, like the Intentionals and the MPSs, they also have some extremely interesting features as well. And we're still at a very early stage where we don't know what features are really going to count.
Okay.
Because one of the problems with the intentional world is it really is, you go through the looking glass to work with that tool. And I don't know how people are going to react to it.
Sure.
Hey, I mean, I'm a Smalltalk fan, right? I consider Smalltalk to be a way better programming language than anything that's come up in the last 20 years.
Sure.
But you know, frankly, Smalltalk has got this much of the world.
Right.
So
C kind of took over and their derivatives, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, but so there's lots of things that could pan out because there's all sorts of factors that come in. It's very difficult to predict which ones are going to be important. And what I think is interesting is the fact that there's a whole load of different tools playing it out, exploring alternatives, and I think potentially making a big change to the way we do things. And the gold is this communication with the domain people. That's where if we can improve that channel, then suddenly all sorts of goodies kind of pop up.
Okay.
Well, I'm working for the book is even more backwards than Oslo. I mean, so a joke about you being 19th century. I'm back in the 16th century in my book, writing about stuff that, you know, has been around for 30 years or so, giving people kind of the first steps down that route with very minimal tooling. So, you know, I can play that joke on myself much more than I can play it on you.
Great. Well, so if there was one thing, one message you could give to the Oslo team in terms of where you think they ought to be pointing their tools, things that they're just missing completely, they're missing the point. Or do you think it's pretty close?
I don't even know where to start, actually, because I just don't know where this field is going to go.
Sure.
I think you've got some very nice things with your vision.
Sure.
And it's different in many ways to what the intentional folks are playing, but you can't reset to copy what they do. You have to go your own route and plow that furrow and see where it takes you.
Yeah, I think what you're saying is we've got a bunch of different players right now doing a bunch of different things in the same space.
Right.
And we're not really sure what's going to work and what's not.
Exactly.
And, you know, the intentional software folks probably have some cool stuff that some people are going to latch onto, and hopefully Oslo has some cool stuff that people are going to latch onto, and other systems that you've mentioned have some cool stuff. And I think over time, you know, we've done this over and over with classes of software, right? Yeah. Where, you know, WordPerfect and Microsoft were busy trying to build the perfect word processor until eventually everybody built the word processor and they all had the same features. They all did the same things.
Right.
And we are just so early days in the DSL space that these language workbenches, such as they are all busy kind of doing their little thing that they think is useful and interesting. But eventually, we're going to figure out what the real features are that everyone needs, and they'll be in common across the set of tools.
Yes. That's going to be a big stretch for some of it, I think. But I don't know. I mean, that's part of the mystery of knowing where it's going to go. But I do think it's an area for for paying attention to and taking a look at what's happening. It's going to be it's interesting to watch this space get steadily more and more exciting and steadily more and more real.
Well, so that was the interesting thing about throwing this conference. There's 150 people at this at the DSL DevCon. I had no idea. I mean, this is 50% more attendees than I've ever had at any of my DevCons before. I was turning people away. Yeah. I had no idea that there was this much real interest. I mean, across the industry, you know, different operating systems, different tool sets. There's so many people that care about this stuff.
Yes.
And that surprised me. I mean, it seems like there's a real... There's a real set of... I thought, you know, I'm on my little team doing my little thing, right? And at Microsoft, it's easy to kind of turn inward. And so it's amazing to me how much interest there is in this space. Well, that's good.
Yeah. I mean, well, I've been doing talks on DSLs at a number of conferences last year or two. And as I said, I kind of got interested in it a few years ago. So it's kind of not surprising to me that... I was not surprised at all that you've got 150 people at the DSL DEF CON. And... I think it's going to that level of interest is just going to grow and grow. I mean, I've seen steady acceleration over the last few years.
Yeah, that's great. All right. Well, thank you very much for your time, Mr. Fowler.
Okay.